Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetti, here with my co-host, Ron Reardon, and Lee Cantor, our producer, is back.
Back in town. How are you doing, Jim?
Doing great. Ron, you have invited a very special guest here today.
Yes, I have. Terry Sullivan, a specialist in entrepreneurship.
Welcome, Terry.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
So, Terry, tell us about yourself a little bit here, your company name, so our guests can get to know you a little bit.
The company name is TMS Consulting, and when I do a PR piece in a public setting, I say, how many of you think those must be my initials? And I always get a laugh, but the answer is they are. But they stand for areas of expertise. The T stands for training and mentoring. I create internal training programs with corporations, and I mentor entrepreneurs. The M in the center stands for marketing and sales. I've been a national sales trainer, so if you want to improve profitability, we probably could talk. And the S at the end stands for success. It's under that umbrella I do community-based workshops on starting and growing a business.
Now, have you always been in this business or in your own business, or what? How did you get involved in this world of entrepreneurship?
Well, I've been a salesperson for most of my professional life.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity to become a sales rep for an accounting company here in Atlanta. And the program was set up by a national consultancy. I was able to bring on board 16 new clients in 6 weeks. And they hadn't had that many clients in a whole year.
Wow.
So I became the national sweetheart, if you will, and ultimately went on to become part of the national consultancy.
Wow. That's a good start, good background there.
Yeah, I understand that you focus on entrepreneurship. Why do you do that?
Well, as the specialist in the accounting industry with our firm, I would train outside sales reps, and we called on businesses that had 50 or less employees. So I worked with entrepreneurs all over the United States, all different industries, many different size cities, products and services, and I developed the mindset that they were missing the essentials. Many times they were really great at the topic of their business, but they knew nothing about how to run a business.
Well, that I think that certainly goes for the true saying in our business with inventors that unfortunately, even though they have various backgrounds, many of them do not understand the severity of the entrepreneur and the business side of our business, because they feel somehow that a product is developed and somehow it's bought up, and we all know that that's not the case.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, inventors will come up with a concept or for a new product or a new service or something like that, and they think that they can just sell that idea to an existing company, and they don't even think about, you know, that they really need to think about entrepreneurship and being an entrepreneur and starting a company.
Mm-hmm. I think probably the greatest challenge is that people think that their enthusiasm for their product or their new service is going to carry them through, and they don't understand they need to learn how to negotiate contracts. They need to know how to protect their interests. And people like you, Ron, of course, are very important in patents and trademarks and copywriting ideas, but often they've never had anyone or even held for themselves a position of managerial responsibility.
Yeah, a lot of times we call a great big book of the inventors as Yahoo inventors, because you talked about enthusiasm, like Yahoo, this is, you know, everybody's going to love this, everybody's going to buy this. And they focus on the patent, but you know, we tell them, you know, patent is just one piece of a 100-piece puzzle, and there's a lot of other pieces that are required to have success in the marketplace.
Now, Terry, what are some of the things that this this new entrepreneur, or maybe the person that does that, it has something, but they don't know what they don't know? How do you kind of coach them? What are the beginning baby steps that you recommend they take?
That's a great question, and while I was in the accounting industry, I came across an acronym I really liked, and then I expanded it. And it's the word ability, and I think of it as the seven people involved who are critical to your success. The first four people will help you to manage risk. That's your accountant, your banker, your insurance agent, and your lawyer. The I and the T are people who will help you to grow. That's your investment advisor and your tax advisor. And, of course, the Y at the end is you. You have to understand those relationships and understand the role of those functions in your business if you're going to grow a business successfully.
You know, I think why a lot of inventors don't take this part of the business or the business of business seriously is because many inventors go out with the intention of licensing. And the premise behind that, of course, is you create a product and then you basically hand it off to somebody else. So, and a lot of these inventors that are hobbyists are great at coming up with ideas. And I know a number that come up with hundreds and hundreds of ideas. They acknowledge that they don't want to learn that side of the business world. And, you know, there are times where they don't need to. But, you know, for me, it's hard to imagine not being in a business and not understanding how to really grow a business, run a business, and manage a business correctly. Because at the end of the day, it's about dollars and cents and managing time and managing people and managing yourself, as you mentioned. It's such an interesting concept around that.
Without a doubt. And I think there's one of the myths that I think is paramount for people to understand is that you need to talk to an accountant as you get started, not at the end of a year. You won't know how to capture all of the things that you should be capturing and catalog them correctly. And if you wait until the year is over, the accountant has no way to go back and make adjustments in how those things have taken place. Coupled with that, that's one of the reasons I recommend this is the perfect time of year. If they are an entrepreneur and they're a solopreneur, then they're probably going to find themselves in a January to December tax year. And that means they've got now, as we head into October, they have the last quarter to make adjustments, capture things properly, get organized correctly. So I recommend people have their accounting conference now.
You know, I wish we could get through to inventors. It's so hard. I mean, everything you're saying makes sense. We all know what we're supposed to do, but like a lot of people, I mean, I've done it too, where you go to the accountant at the end of the year, but you know what? You pay for that, and you learn a hard lesson. Mm-hmm. It's not what you want to do, but, you know, life gets in the way. A lot of these inventors have day jobs. They work. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them that are, I mean, we talk to inventors that are college students, and so they don't understand the seriousness of this stuff, and it's one of those things, well, when I have a business, I'll get in the business of learning how to be in business, but the planning is obviously critical if you're going to do this or have a goal of going from having a job to being in your own business. That's
85% of small businesses crash and burn. And most of that happens in the first 12 to 18 months. What tends to happen after that time period is that they show up in audit mode. Either through Department of Labor issues, they didn't handle their employment issues properly. It can be they didn't handle sales tax properly. It can be that they didn't even realize that the law says sales and use tax, so they don't think about use at all and consequently run into a challenge with that. Or in just as it would be, the IRS is stepping up audits of home-based businesses and small business, and unfortunately, they're deemed to become a hobby if they don't have the proper documentation in place. One classic issue is if they've incorporated, but they just did it themselves, they may not realize that they have to file a form with the IRS if they wanted to be treated like a small business.
Yeah, and even locally, having a local business license, I mean, these are things that you learn, and states vary. So what works
counties
here...
Counties vary.
Right, so people don't understand that. And again, those are the things that... It's good to have a good business, general business attorney. I mean, one of the first things I did was I hired a very general business attorney who went through basic contracts and, you know, here are the basic things you need. And a lot of it's not expensive, and it's just some of it is not difficult paperwork. It's just the basics. You got to be active and be recognized by your county, your state.
It's just a good foundation to have.
And it's easy stuff.
Right, but it's hard for the person to really invest in that when they're not even sure for sure that their product's going to take off. So it's hard to spend money on these things that aren't revenue producing preventively. You know, hypothetically, if everything goes great.
Yeah, and that's true, but that's, as we say, that's business. I mean, we pound this all the time, this issue about if you're going to get into this world of inventing, that it must be treated as such,
as a business
right. and you're going to have to find a way to prepare properly, to plan, to have those dollars available. It doesn't cost a ton of money to get a few hours advice from an attorney just to figure out what you need to do to get set up. And maybe some of those things don't have to be done that day, but like anything else, you can plan and budget out things, you know, start up, you know, to form an LLC or a C corp or an S corp. Yeah, I mean, it costs some money, but it's not, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. But if you are then start doing business and you do not have an incorporated business. I mean, there could be all kinds of legal issues and liabilities, and that's scarier than...
People don't realize that if they don't maintain their corporate minutes, the IRS can declare them at any point in their future that they're not a business. They're a hobby. And then the back taxes, the disallowed deductions, all of that can put them out of business. And if they haven't properly incorporated, it also means they're open to a wide range of legal issues that can impact on their personal lives.
I can tell you right now, one thing I always do is I always use an accountant for everything finance. I mean, I just, because the laws are always changing.
Mm-hmm.
Just when you think you've got it down, something else comes up. Plus, my accountant always finds the best and most proper deductions and, mm-hmm. you know, plans out part of what we pay for with our accountant is this planning. We speak to him every quarter. He'll send us updates to via email. Here's some, you know, laws that are changing that he doesn't expect us to act on them, but he's making us aware as mm-hmm. business owners. Here's how this can impact you. Here are some tips how to handle those changes. But, you know, when we go into a new year, a new calendar year, we know what to do, what we're supposed to provide to our accountants, and how we're supposed to look at our business. And that preventative medicine is, I know, has saved me a lot of money over the course mm-hmm. of time.
Yeah, it's important to have that right team, to have a really good foundation. Earlier, you used the word solopreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Did you coin that?
No.
First time I've ever heard solopreneur.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, I hear that. And there's a lot of, in addition to mompreneurs and solopreneurs, and
okay.
I mean, there's all kinds of preneurs out there.
Yeah. Could you run by Ability one more time?
Happy to. And I do want to make a distinction, because Jim talked about the use of an accountant for advisory purposes. That's why I've separated accountant and tax advisor into two different categories.
Right.
So the ABIL will help you to manage risk. That's your accountant, your banker, insurance agent, and your lawyer. The accountant in that context for me is somebody who can help you with sales tax issues, payroll issues, just making sure that you've got your chart of accounts properly in place. You don't need a CPA for that, but you do need somebody who specializes with small business. So you're not a corporate giant, and you need to know what laws will apply to you. One of the subject matter experts that I use frequently is a lady by the name of Linda Galler. Her company's called The Accounting Practice. Last year, she took 160 continuing hours of education. Her requirements professionally were 30.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do that.
So that's what I mean about finding a tax advisor. Linda specializes in small business, and so I know I can refer people to her very comfortably because that's as she studies the subject. She goes to seminar, conference. She's involved in professional associations. That's one of the things also for a startup business owner that I recommend very heartily is please get involved in your professional associations. I love the Inventors Association of Georgia and, of course, its national counterparts because it says to the person who thinks they've got a great idea, there are support systems. There are people who will know what's ahead of you, can counsel you so that you don't necessarily have to make missteps, and that you can get there faster with less challenge if you align yourself with those organizations that are subject matter experts.
I think the challenge a lot of inventors have is that separation between knowledge and then actually implementing the knowledge. And that's the struggle we have as service providers in this business is that, you know, and I attend the Inventor Association meetings from time to time and in other states. And what you find is that a lot of those people have been there for years and they know a lot, but they're not taking any action towards mm-hmm. developing their business. And it's kind of sad because a lot of them are actually really smart and they really know as much as some of the service providers that I know in this business. They really understand the process, how to develop product, some of the legal aspects, the accounting, and but they're still there, not, you know, either out of fear. Sometimes it's money.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like what Ron and I do and you do, I'm sure, and Lee and everybody else in their respective businesses. I mean, I'm not of great value to my clients unless I am constantly learning what's new, trying to understand what could be different about the business and, mm-hmm. and talking to other service providers and sharing information. And that's, but for inventors, it's the same thing. Understand what you're doing before you get into the business so you understand the risks.
Yeah.
And that leads, Terry, to my next question, which I think will be valuable, which is for an inventor with limited funds, what do you think should be on their checklist of things that they should take care of or consider
mm-hmm.
before they really jump in?
One of the things is to be sure that they understand why they should be incorporated. and get that properly handled. They need to separate their family's well-being financially and otherwise from the success or failure of their business. If they don't handle that correctly, the liability will roll back over and can literally decimate their financial well-being, separate families. Many times, divorce is over money. And if you don't have support for your business ventures, I promise you it's a very difficult challenge ahead. So that's a real critical component as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I read a stat that it was just recently that, and I would have thought that infidelity would be the number one
right.
divorce. It's still money, wow. number one.
Yeah,
still.
I had a divorce where I had an attorney share with me one time, a fellow I knew at church, that when clients came into him and it was infidelity or drinking or things like that, he wouldn't even take notes because he knew that the divorce wasn't coming down. But if first thing she says was, you know, the finances are a problem, then he got out his notepad because right. he knew that this divorce was happening.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Primarily, I believe, because if you are always at odds over dollars, it's really hard to talk about anything else. It mm-hmm. really is the center of attention 24/7. If you can't buy the right groceries, you can't. You know, I was at a Goodwill meeting the other morning for their business advisory council, and I'm proud to be part of that. One of the comments that was made by the gentleman conducting the meeting, we were talking about hard times and how the job fair had been a great success for them. And he said he came out, and there was this guy standing out in front of his driveway, in front of the apartment building, and just going, I don't believe they did that. I just don't believe they did that. And so Matt went over and said, is there something I can help you with? And he said, they've repossessed my car.
Wow.
All right, this is a very pricey complex, and Matt offered to give him a ride to work the next morning. Mm. The guy had a PhD in engineering, has been unemployed for 18 months.
Well, I'm smart. I let my wife handle the money, and I don't worry about anything.
That's the
formula for success right there.
Usually with any couple, one is good money manager and one's not.
Well, I mean, the good thing, my wife is an excellent money manager, and I handle money fine, too. I just would rather her handle the money and
right.
you know, she's comfortable. She likes, you know, feeling, getting the bills paid, everything taken care of, that type of stuff. So, you know, I'll just focus on my career and, you know, she handles that side for me. But, Terry, okay, so we've got obviously learning about incorporating and mm-hmm. setting up your business from a legal perspective. What else? What else should inventors who have a product idea that are getting ready to go about the process of getting it developed, what else should they know or seek to learn from a business perspective?
Anyway. Well, I shocked an entire audience and the people who'd invited me to speak at the governor's entrepreneurship panel that I participated in. They were looking for me, I guess, to bring wisdom, and I started off by disappointing everyone when I said, no one cares about you. In today's marketplace, this is a customer-driven environment. You will be a commodity unless you have a unique selling proposition. It cannot be about your personal interest. It needs to be about, do you see a need in the marketplace that you have a unique way to complete or to fulfill or to enhance? And unless you look from a customer perspective for not the features, but rather the benefits over time of utilizing what you're looking to create, the answer is it may be a very fun thing to give to somebody at Christmas, but it's not likely to be the next, you know, hottest item on anyone's list.
Right. It's what I tell inventors often when they approach retail buyers, that they don't want to hear your 15-minute story about your life and why you came up with the idea. And it is interesting, and you can distill that down into a 30-second mm-hmm. story, and that's fine. People are interested, but at the end of the day, it's about profits and turn and, mm-hmm. You know, success. The buyers have a job to do. They get fired if they don't perform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they have to, unfortunately, get past all the small talk and find mm-hmm. out why that product is good for their customers and how it's going to make them money.
Mm-hmm.
And when inventors really grasp that concept, they tend to have more successes than those that focus on themselves and their own personal stories that, again, are sometimes very interesting, but mm-hmm. don't translate into dollars and cents.
Right.
Yeah, when I share with inventors, I have to tell them, you know, it's not about the product. It's about the business behind the product. It, like mm-hmm. you said, it's about the profit, you know, and the, mm-hmm. and the turns. And
that's right. One of the acronyms I created after firing a client is for the word best, because people like to think that they're the best at whatever they do. And in my world, I don't think you ever achieve knowing everything there is to know. If you have reached that point, then you're now at stalemate because the rest of the world and the economy is going on beyond you. So when I look at BEST, I think it stands for better every single time. The best advice I can give to an entrepreneur is to remember it's a learning curve and conditions are going to change over time. So I tell business owners that there are three requirements to be successful in business. If you don't have them, please stay employed for someone else. And that is, you need to be flexible, you need to be adaptable, and you absolutely must have a sense of humor, because life is going to cause some ups and downs. And if you can't, you know, separate the personal from what's happened in the business environment, you will find that your energy gets rapidly depleted, and then no one really wants to talk to you or deal with you.
Yeah, that's easier said than done, though. It's tough. I mean, I talk to people, and it's hard for them to separate the emotional side of it. And, you know, again, it's tough to tell people and give them that dose of medicine by saying that you can't let emotions run the business side of the business. Again, with the buyers, you got to go in there and, you know, you're going to get a lot of no's, and that's part of the game. And, yeah, it's easy for me to say, well, just don't worry. Someone says no, just move on. Some people just can't move on. And like you said, adapting. If they can adapt to getting a lot of rejection and understand it's a numbers game. So you call on 20 buyers, you're going to get 17, 18, maybe even 20 no's. What do you do? Is it? And I always tell inventors, someone said to me, well, what happens when I get a no? Do I just leave? I said, no, that's your time to ask the buyer why.
That's right.
Is there something that you can take away from them? And if you start hearing that over and over again, then maybe there's something that you can change and you can adapt and grow. And that would be the difference between getting a no the next time and getting a yes.
I was working with a group of apprentices in an environment where they were practicing a technical skill. And at the end of the day, they all came beat back into the conference room. And I looked at them and I thought, there's got to be a way to put kind of a cap to the end of this experience. And so I put the following formula on the board. P cubed plus C equals S. And that stands for practice, practice, practice. But you can't practice doing it wrong. You have to practice, and here comes the C, with a commitment to improve. And when you do that over time, you'll have success. So I agree completely. And when I teach sales training, I teach people how to ask effective questions. It's not about telling anyone anything. It's really about asking sufficient questions that they choose your solution. And they want you to provide the solution.
And that's on target. You know, Jim was talking about the no's. Unfortunately, most inventors, when they get the first no, then that's when they quit. And it's really a rare inventor that goes beyond that very first no.
And unfortunately, and I share this all the time, especially with people who are new to sales, is that sometimes you've just run into a jerk. It has nothing to do with you.
That's true.
Nothing to do with your product or your service. You did everything right. The person on the other side of the table wasn't in the right frame of mind or in the right place, or you were talking to the wrong person within the organization to make decisions. It may have nothing to do with you. But frequently, then you go home, and that phrase, throw the baby out with the bathwater, comes to mind, because then you start revamping everything, and you take out, in many cases, the things you needed to be sure were always anchored. Based on somebody's five-minute conversation with you, you throw everything to the side.
Is there a ballpark number of no's that an inventor will go through before they get a yes in terms of meeting with buyers?
Man, that could be... Well, if I use my own experiences, you know, and I can break it out into the hundreds category because there's been that many interactions. Right. I would say it's 90-plus percent no. All the time. But you don't need to have any more than a few percent say yes. I mean, if you sell to Target or Walmart or whoever, that's a big yes. And again, a lot of it is sometimes the buyers just, you know, someone gets up and they're in a bad mood and you just happen to interact at the wrong time. Or sometimes, you know, again, it is a learning thing. And I still today, 20 years doing this, still look to improve my approach and learn more about people than about the approach. It's about not about the product. It's about the interaction, the engagement, learning to be politely persistent, as I always say. You know, I have an inventor not too long ago who said, well, I was calling on a buyer, and, you know, I called him every day and left a voicemail, and I didn't get one back. I'm like, reverse the situation. That would annoy me. I mean, I would never call you back. So, you know, leave a message. Wait 3-4 days. You know, they're busy. They're getting 100 of these calls. And then if you call back the next time and you hear a voicemail, don't leave one. Then just hang up and then try again. And that's why I tell them sometimes it takes months and months to get a hold of the right person because, you know, that's life. They don't know you. They're not your friend. They're not your family. They don't have a real reason to call you back immediately. Right. So.
There's a really great book that's called Soft Selling in a Hard World. It's by Jerry Voss. And one of the things that I think is really critical in that, and when I take on a personal coaching client contract, I always have my client read it. Because one of the elements in that process is that you're going to find it takes anywhere between 6 to 8 contacts before somebody connects your name, your product, and anything that may be important to them. And it can take between 8 to 15 connections before they're ready to buy. And most people stop after the second attempt.
That's amazing. So. Yeah, I read an article once about Zig Ziglar, who in his early years held the world record for mm-hmm. the most number of high-end pots and pans sold. Mm-hmm. And he knew that his numbers was that he had to make 100 contacts to get 10 appointments mm-hmm. to make one sale.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Nobody knows those numbers better than the insurance industry.
Oh, yeah.
Learned that. I mean, they've got it down to, 1/800 of a percent. Right. You know, they got it queued down.
Part of that, though, is also that he practiced doing it right every single time. He didn't let the no roll over into a lessened enthusiasm or a shift in his pitch, if you will. He knew that what he was saying was on target. He knew he simply had to get it in front of enough people. So when I marketed business distributorships across the country, we knew for every 15 responses we had to the ad, we'd find one qualified distributor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So less than that, we didn't find any.
It's the old red letter language that's taught where, and then I say insurance companies, I worked for one for a short period, and I mean, they have full-blown, you know, week-long classes on, here's what you say. You say it every single time. When you get a no, this is the reaction. Mm-hmm. Stick to the script. Don't sway. And even though you may think what they're saying is not right, it's been practiced and practiced for years and hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of times collectively over all the associates they have. And if you stay on that course and do not stray from it, you're going to have a much, much better success rate mm-hmm. than somebody who just tries to wing it and goes off on a tangent and mm-hmm. gets affected by it emotionally. Just stay on it, and you'll close X percent of people every time.
Years ago, someone signed off an email when emails were a brand new thing with an acronym that I just really appreciate. It's for the word system, and it stands for saving yourself significant time, energy, and money. So when you have a track to run on that already has been proven, I tell people, get your ego out of the way. When they get to the parking lot of wherever they're going, I tell them, lock it in the trunk.
Yeah.
Because it has nothing to do with you, everything to do with the needs, the wants, the desires of the person with whom you're meeting.
It's a hard, I think, through all of the business of inventing, I think the psychological aspects are the ones that are obviously the most difficult mm-hmm. to overcome, and the ones that if you can master them to some degree, you'll have a much easier time. Not just success in that way, but just, you know, from a feeling inside to know that you have a handle on it and it's healthy mm-hmm. and like you can end your day mm-hmm. and know that, you know what, you're not stressing out and you're not mm-hmm. it's not keeping you up because you know that, again, it's yeah. I got to do this every day. I got to be consistent. And mm-hmm. Terry, look, we want to, before we run out of time, I want to talk about your workshops here. It looks like you've got a pretty vast list of things. It looks like you're in action every week, organizing your startup, planning for success, accounting essentials, customer service, the internet and your business, financing your business. You seem to cover a lot of subjects. Tell us quickly about your workshops, how they work, and how people can find out more about them.
Okay. The workshop series you're referring to is what I'm currently providing through the Atlanta Urban League. In years past, this series started when I worked with the DeKalb County Chamber to reach out to small businesses, home-based businesses. And we thought, you know, they need to have a reason to want to come to the chamber. When we did those, the workshops were $129 a piece. The Urban League had a program that was funded called the Entrepreneurship Center, and they were looking for a new approach, a way to really broaden their outreach. And I was, through referral, introduced to someone at the center, and they said, we have to create this curriculum. And they were told, no, you don't. Terry already has one. So this is a 9-course series. It meets on Mondays and Tuesdays, so somebody can finish the whole series in 5 weeks. And I did that purposely because the Entrepreneurship Center also offers a 12-week or a 3-month-long program on creating your business plan. So I wanted people to understand the essentials so that when they got to the business plan, they'd be better prepared and get a stronger experience out of that. Our classes are going to start again the week of September 28th, and the business plan class starts on the Wednesday of that week on the 30th, and the pricing for the workshops is phenomenal. You can get all 9 of the startup essentials for just $129.
That's phenomenal. What I call a bargain.
Now, how long is each class
It's a three-hour class.
3 hours, okay.
They're in the evenings. People can, in Startup Essentials, come and just take one. So if you want to learn more about the Internet and social media, you could just sign up for one class. It's $20.
Well, that's a good choice, you know, a la carte. You know, sometimes somebody may say, well, you know, I already work with an accountant or a lawyer, and I've got my business organized. Well, you know, I need to know more about, you know, I want to learn about marketing or networking or the Internet or something. So that's a nice option you have there.
Yeah, and talking about networking, I know there's been a lot of buzz recently about social media. What are your thoughts about social media?
Well, I had the good fortune to encounter a person who specializes in this, and we had a very long conversation, which led to my creating a component for the networking class that deals with social media. And again, I think one of the distinctions that's important for people to get is that in social media, they're looking to learn about you, the person. They're not looking for you to try to sell your product.
It's almost an exact opposite. It's kind of a big transition. And you notice those people that are just selling stuff. And, it's annoying.
It is.
You know, people do want to know about your life a little bit. You're a real person. You have a family, or you have hobbies. And that's that's how people get to know you. I mean, I know for me personally, it's been social media has been a huge part of my business. And, and again, a lot of the people I work with, I never would have met otherwise.
And
from people all over the world. So it's been great. And by the time you work with them, though, you kind of know them a little bit already.
That's exactly
which
right.
Which is kind of a weird thing, but you do.
And you can feel more confident in making that referral. And I think it's important to make a distinction between men and women at this point. 85% of household purchases are made by women, and they don't go to the Yellow Pages. They ask their neighbors and their coworkers for where to go. If they're new to a city, they're going to ask, where's the dentist? Where's the best bank? Where's the best place to get X? Where's the best childcare? They are not going to Yellow Pages for that information. They're looking for people who've been there and done that. So when you can put more about your joy, if you will, for the things that you've acquired in your experiences, people can connect to the experience. And it's really critical for people to understand we make decisions emotionally first, and then we look for logic to back that up. And that's why having an opportunity to create an online persona of who you are and why you're a good resource. One tip I give to every business I consult with and every workshop I teach is that the very last thing you should say in your phone call as a business professional should be, in my opinion, is there anything else I can help you with today? Because even if I cannot provide it to you personally, I work with lots of people, and I'm sure I could find someone that's credible for you to talk to next.
That's usually, you know what's funny, that's usually one of my opening lines. When somebody calls me, I introduce myself and explain what I do, and I quickly start out the conversation by saying, tell me about what you're looking for, because if I cannot help you, there's a great chance that I know somebody in this business who can. And and usually by the end of the conversation, or, well, I should say even well before the middle of the conversation, actually, I know if I can help them. And then and then I'm able to, but that's also a time-saving mechanism for me. I'm able to recognize that, okay, they should be speaking to Ron and not me. And then I can defer and just let them know to get back in touch with me when they're ready for me. So
that brings up the whole concept of having a plan of action. And when I teach target marketing, the question there is, and it's also part of the market research class, is who really should be your audience? Do you know who's the right person to be working with? Because if you're trying to sell soccer training to somebody who's a golf enthusiast, the answer is you're on the wrong track, yeah, and they're not the right people. I've got a student in class right now whose significant other is a sports specialist, and he trains young professionals in golf and soccer with the hopes of helping them to get a scholarship. And when we talk about that, one of the things I said is, understand there's two very different audiences. You have the young adult who wants to get better training, but you have the parent who's going to have to fund it.
That's
and they're
true.
Two different conversations.
Yes, they are.
So that's part of evaluating where should you be putting time and energy.
I know that a lot of times when I get a call, I need to kind of screen the clients.
Mm-hmm.
And if one real alarm bell for me is if a client calls up and says that they don't have a computer and they don't have an email account, that's when I refer them to another attorney.
Well, mm-hmm. when they call up and say, Jim, I'm completely broke and I have no money, that's always a troubling concern.
Oh, I'd love to help you.
Yeah, you know.
Well, let me tell you, gentlemen, that you could refer them to the Atlanta Urban League.
There's the outlet. There it is, the
they
answer.
They have an opportunity to get some ground-level training. And one of the great things that we're doing in the fall quarter is we are offering 5 scholarships for each of the 3 classes. The 3rd class is a QuickBooks class. It'll be 5 Monday nights. And it's only $79. And it's being taught by somebody who, again, is a small business specialist. Her name's Karen, and her company is the Small Business Advisor. So I look for people who really concentrate on small business when I look to bring experts into the classes.
Sure. Well, that's important. Well, Terry, how do people get a hold of you? What's the best way for them to contact you and learn more about you?
Okay. Well, we've been talking about websites, so that's a good place to start. My website is TMS4Success.
Wow.
TMS for Success. And, of course, that stands for Training and Mentoring, Marketing and Sales, and Success Strategies. My email address is even as easy as TMS4Success@gmail.com.
keep it consistent.
Yes.
It's part of the branding process.
And I've just started a 3rd website that's a social media. It's in pre-launch status, but people can go there and learn more about it. And it's called Fun, the number 2, Succeed. Fun to Succeed.
Very good. Well, Terry, thank you so much for being here. I believe that our audience out there have got an incredible amount of good tips, especially remembering, you know, the acronym ABILITY.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a lot of good structures there. So thank you so much for being
here. Thanks, Terry.
It's been a pleasure.
Good.
So
nice too.
This has been Jim DeBetta and Ron Reardon and Lee Cantor and another exciting episode of Launch.